Manuel, still clinging tightly, set Anya on her feet.
You steady?
Anya nodded, but he didn't release her.
Guess I got a little cocky with that one. I'd better stick to the basic moves and running for my life when the thing gets too close.
Manuel squeezed her in a hug. His cheek brushed hers, and Anya registered the scent of his spicy aftershave. She caught a glimpse of Cristo, who rolled his eyes at the flirtation he'd likely seen many times before. Anya shoved herself out of Manuel's grip and handed him the cape.
I think that's enough for today.
Yes, the bull got the better of you. But no worries. There's always tomorrow. You didn't feel the hoof.
The hoof?
He pointed to her leg. Lifting her skirt, she saw a dusty red smear of dirt from her knee to her ankle. The bull must have almost stepped on her foot.
It's nothing. Your dinner guests will think you pushed me.
I like you, Anya Kree.
The matador turned and blocked her against the barn, putting both hands to the wall over her shoulders and pressing his body against hers. Anya reacted by drawing up her knee. He relented, but didn't step back.
To be bedded by El Bravo is a great victory. Let me show you how I tame American women.
I kind of like remaining wild and free. I'm sorry, Señor Bravo, if I've given you the wrong impression. I'm just here as a friend of Garin's.
Are you his lover? I should have asked him.
Manuel stepped back, taking in Anya's figure through the skirt and red blouse that now felt gaudy and not at all comfortable.
He is a very lucky man.
Garin and I are not... I should freshen up before he returns. Thank you for showing me your, tapework, Señor Bravo.
Go ahead and use the washroom in the villa. The butler will show you where it is. I'll be right in.
The museum's database was packed with information, but searching it wasn't easy. The ancient operating system never seemed to merit an update, come the bi-yearly budget reviews. What's more, it was only in the last 10 years that they had begun to scan the old paper records into a digital format. It was slow going, and there were many untouched boxes of records still in the basement archives. Nevertheless, after about an hour's efforts, James Harlow managed to find what he was looking for. His computer screen displayed a black-and-white photo of the bronze bull statue, along with a document detailing its acquisition. The curator at that time figured that the statue originated in the 17th century and represented a pagan god of fertility. It was a minor acquisition in their catalog, and in 1921, not 3 weeks after it was first put on display, the statue was stolen.
Well, I'll be damned. It really does belong to us.
Looking at the image on his computer, Harlow's memory was jolted into recollection. Years ago, he'd been given some fascinating insight into this little bull, information that was virtually lost to history. Scanning the document data, Harlow verified the acquisition date and name of the donor. Harold Wilson, a name that had no significance to Harlow, had donated it after returning from a trip to Guatemala. It wasn't at all Aztec in nature, and there was no certificate of provenance, but that didn't mean much. If what Harlow had been told about the object was true, it had originated in Spain. The museum apparently had accepted the donation with a blind eye.
This should make it easier to get it returned.
He hit print. Someone had to have known exactly what the statue was when it was stolen in 1921, Harlow postulated. Yet they hadn't gotten far if Anya Creed had dug up the booty in Jerez.
Or maybe they hadn't had a clue.
Harlow tugged down a scruffy notebook he'd labeled London, 1995. It was the year he'd met Rockford LaPlante, a man who made Indiana Jones look like a punk. Rockford had traversed every inch of the world, including islands rumored to be populated with headhunters. If issued a challenge, he leapt to meet it. If given a deadline, he'd beat it by hours or days. He was known to wield a machete and semi-automatic at all times and could judge a poisonous snake from a harmless viper at striking distance. Rockford was currently on a quest for the Fountain of Youth, and Harlow wouldn't be surprised if the man found it. LaPlante might have gotten along well with Anya Creed, but he wouldn't have appreciated her morals interfering with a devotion to the quest. The things Harlow had learned from Rockford could fill volumes, and as luck would have it, Harlow took notes about everything. He leafed through the moleskin notebook and found his page. To tracing a finger over the pencil sketch of the statue Rockford had drawn as he'd been describing it. The man had once seen the bronze statue, and then it had been lost. A small trinket, he'd said. No one would ever know its true value, or that its real treasure was inside.
In the belly of the bull. Clever.
Through the centuries, many a valuable treasure had been hidden inside less valuable artifacts to transport them through customs and shipping ports without alerting authorities. In this particular bull's belly, there was rumored to be an exquisite jewel, far more valuable than the Hope Diamond. Rockford hadn't been clear on what it was exactly, but he'd thought it wasn't a diamond. The adventurer believed the thing had been created in the 17th century as a gift to King Louis XIII from Philip III of Spain on the eve of his daughter Anne's marriage to the French king. But the carriage the future queen had been riding in had been looted en route, possibly by the very guards escorting her. In the intervening centuries, no one appeared to have been the wiser to what might lie in its belly. Rockford's only proof was having seen some designs for statues by a little-known 17th century artist who had once produced some jewels for Philip III's wife, Margaret. Harlow slapped the notebook shut.
Yes, quite the find.
And yet, it had been passed over and left behind near a dead man's body.
Interesting.
The Matador's house was a marvel of modern design, accented with various ancient artifacts placed in recessed nooks and standing on the floor in the corners of most rooms. Anya passed a bronze bull displayed in the hallway and paused to look it over. About a sixth the size of the so-called calf she'd learned to cape, its sinuous lines and smooth surface leaned toward a modern sculpture. The horns were tipped with silver, and one of the ears was pierced with a silver ring featuring what resembled Celtic ribbon work around the circumference.
Very nice, but certainly not old.
Anya had no idea matadors made so much money. Then again, Manuel had said that his whole collection was comprised of gifts. The man certainly had generous friends. Searching for the bathroom, Anya strolled past an open door and peeked inside. It wasn't the room she was looking for, but the low lighting glowing off the walls tempted her. Anya walked inside the small, windowless room. The plaster walls were illuminated by a stretch of halogen lights tracking across the ceiling. Nothing decorated the walls, except for trowel swishes in the plaster beneath the muted ochre paint. A simple damask-padded bench fashioned from dark-stained wood sat against one wall. The wall opposite the door hosted a shrine of sorts, or possibly an altar. A dark wood table rose before a cushioned prie-dieu. On the altar, a few candles and an incense burner sat on a white cloth edged with elaborate white tatting. The most fascinating votive crowns hung over the altar, two of them suspended from delicate gold chain link. Visigothic in origin, from the 7th or 8th century, if her guess was correct. They had once been fashioned by kings as gifts to cathedrals. They were particularly valuable and rare. Anya had only seen one in the Madrid Museum years ago and didn't believe there were many others out there. Not in museums, anyway. Most had been lost over the centuries and probably hung in the homes of the wealthy. And, perhaps, one suddenly intriguing matador. Anya stood on tiptoe to inspect the larger of the two. The crown-like circle of pounded gold was dotted with rubies and sapphires. Another gold circlet was suspended above the first on elaborate gold chains to give it the votive appearance. The Visigoth kings sat beneath them on their thrones. They hadn't actually worn them as crowns. As was sometimes the case, one of these crowns was inscribed around its base. It read in Latin, "Given by Alaric."
A Visigoth king?
The name sounded familiar. If he'd ruled in medieval times, she would have known for sure. How El Bravo had come to possess two votive crowns baffled her. More generous friends?
They should be in a museum.
Anya lifted a finger, but then stopped. It felt sacrilegious to touch it.
No, they can't be authentic.
They had to be copies or fakes.
Did you touch them?
No, they're beautiful.
This is my private sanctuary. I never allow people inside.
I'm sorry, the door was open and I was looking...
Come out of here now, please.
Forgive me, please. I was drawn to the votive crowns. The only one I've ever seen was in the Madrid Museum.
And now you have seen two more.
They aren't authentic, are they?
The washroom is next door.
Manuel gestured ahead without meeting her eyes. And then he shoved her shoulder against the wall, and his dark eyes found hers. Heartbeat racing, Anya felt like the bull standing before the torero that intended her death.
Tell me truthfully, did you touch anything?
No.
I don't like it when people touch my things, especially my sacred things.
No, I was going to, but I didn't. I swear it.
His fingers squeezed her shoulder close to her neck, pinching the artery painfully. But then he let up and, with a bow, gestured she walk ahead of him. Anya made quick work in the bathroom, washing off the red dust on her bare leg and splashing water on her face. Staring at her reflection, she wondered what the matador was involved in.
Tread lightly, Anya.
Manuel Bravo could prove more deadly out of the ring. Garin had arrived while she was washing up. Once more, he wore a cream linen suit.
Hemingway, look out.
Anya joined Garin and Manuel in the sitting room outside the dining area. Both men puffed on cigars, and when offered, Anya accepted a Cuban Churchill. A few puffs opened up to rich notes of caramel and hickory and relaxed her, and helped to assimilate her into the often impenetrable men's club. To be in the club, if not quite a member, you had to stand alongside them and engage in the same conversation and not give a damn about your shoes, hair, or dress, but still be able to look good. Manuel sneered at her. He actually sneered. His demeanor had grown decidedly cold as he poured a finger of brandy into a tumbler for himself and leaned against the mahogany bar, still thinking about the votive crowns, she felt sure, as was she. If authentic, they had not been obtained legally.
So, Manuel tells me he gave you a few lessons on fighting a bull. If there's a woman out there who can stand against a bull, it is Anya Creed.
She was a bit skittish, but she has potential. Of course, women should not be allowed to fight professionally. Why is it that nothing frightens you, Senorita Creed? First you chase a sniper, and next you stand before a bull with no training in the cape whatsoever.
You had said the bull was just a yearling, and I did have you right beside me, and I was afraid. You said fear was necessary in the ring. Do bulls feel fear? Can you tell?
Only the cowardly ones do. A brave bull charges without pause, fights to the finish with honor.
Exactly how does a bull display honor?
Manuel smirked and touched Anya at the back of her neck, tapping her with the blunt end of one of his fingers.
If I were to prick you here with the banderilla, and here, and again, could you stand and, focused only on the cape, continue to charge?
It would be difficult, painful, plus I'd be bleeding out.
And yet, the bull does so. The bull challenges me to step up, to face death alongside him.
You do love death.
It is necessary, no?
No. Well, yes, for your profession it is. But for me, I don't favor death or even the idea of it.
Garin's glance to Anya brought images of Joan's broken battle sword to mind. Garin had been convinced of his immortality before the pieces of the sword had been collected. But now that the sword was whole, who knew? A man who had experienced such a long life wasn't willing to concede it to mortality.
What of you, Anya? Do you fear death?
Not at all. It's a natural thing to which we must all eventually succumb. I will admit, I hope my death isn't painful.
Ah, but that is the only way to die. No glory without the pain, eh? I should show you the wound on my abdomen I took from a horn last year. They carried me out to the infirmary, stitched me up without anesthesia, and less than half an hour later, I was back in the ring to finish off the bull. Ha ha ha!
Manuel gave a grand sweep of his hand. Machismo at its finest.
Dinner is served, sir.
Excellent. Thank you.
Anya caught Garin's sorry shake of his head, as if to say, don't bait the maestro, but ignored it. The men walked ahead of her, making it apparent she hadn't breached the men's club after all. Anya stubbed out her cigar. The elaborate meal consisted of 5 courses and 2 wines. By the time dessert was brought out, Anya had begun to wonder where both men put it all, especially the matador, whose costume would show any trace of excess body fat. He had none. Anya set aside the tempting vanilla custard and instead reached for the glass of pansy-garnished water.
This must be fuel for your next fight.
Not at all. I fuel up on protein in the morning and have a light lunch before heading off to the fight. It may not appear as though I work that long in the ring, but the nervous energy alone requires a hearty meal.
And all the sweat. The suit of lights you wear must be a bitch in the sun.
It is not the most comfortable attire. The jacket doesn't allow for ease of movement, but tradition demands the heavy costume. I appreciate the elaborate embroidery on the jacket when it deflects a wayward horn. Now, the shoes, they are a bit feminine, I must admit.
While the men discussed the merits of bespoke leather shoes, Anya let her eyes roam over the wall behind Manuel. It was plastered with tickets to bullfights and posters advertising them. Most of them, Anya noted, fights El Bravo had appeared in. But others were older, dating back decades. Perhaps fights he'd watched when he was younger, or even fights his relatives had appeared in. When Manuel noticed her interest, he turned to stretch an arm along the wall.
My history.
It's fascinating.
Folding the cloth napkin on the table, Anya got up to examine them more closely. She bent to read the details on a ticket.
What is a novierado?
A novice fight. The bull's horns are blunted, and the bulls are often used many times in the rings, which would never be allowed in an official corrida. Once a bull has been in the ring, it's no good for future fights because it begins to learn defensive tactics or to be fearful. The novierado offers opportunity for aspiring bullfighters to appear before the public and hone their skills with a more docile animal. They're often some of the most interesting fights you'll see.
Are there many injuries?
Not so many as you would suspect.
Manuel joined her, and she felt as though his anger over having found her in his sanctuary had finally subsided. He pointed out a yellowed poster, which featured four fighters' names, his in the smallest font, and on the bottom of the list.
This was my first.
That must have been exciting. Are your parents alive? Do they attend your fights?
My mother is ailing, but she comes out once a month, along with her girlfriends. I always dedicate my kills to her. My father is traveling with my brother right now. Reynaldo is rising in the ranks as a matador. He won't be long before he surpasses me.
Anya ran her gaze down the many Spanish names on the posters, and one in particular jumped out at her.
Cesar Soto? Isn't he the chief inspector of the Cadiz police?
You've met him?
Yes.
The man was once an aspiring torero, about the same time I started. He was no good, had no leg strength, and was always stumbling before the bull could even reach the cane. No bravado.
I noticed he has a limp.
Which is why he's not a torero today.
He was the one I spoke to after chasing the woman who attempted to shoot you.
Cesar Soto is on the case. Well, then, I'm sure the matter has already been solved.
The comment was meant as a means to dismiss the conversation. Anya could feel the tension stiffen Manuel's lanky frame beside her. He didn't like talking about Cesar Soto. But apparently Manuel knew him well enough to judge his former fighting skills.
Is it possible they hold animosity toward each other?
The sun is setting. Let's take our brandy out on the veranda.
And without another glance, the men wandered out, leaving Anya searching for Soto's name on the other posters. She didn't find it. The two men were tied together in a manner she couldn't yet piece together. But she would. The computer screen flashed through three different profiles, each an employee of the Cadiz PNP. Cesar Soto paused on the one he deemed most likely to be the double-crossing thief who was looting artifacts from the Puerto Real site. Had the suspect also murdered the guitarist? Soto wouldn't bet on it. He had his suspicions. Hell, he had a very clear idea of the culprit, and that was without taking fingerprints from the scene. Soto wanted to nab the dirty cop. He oversaw this division and wouldn't tolerate such a blatant flick of the finger at his command. It was a good thing he'd sent Anya Creed out of the city. He didn't need her interference or a leak to the media regarding the possibility of a dirty cop. She'd gotten too close to the truth, and he had the distinct impression she was too smart to let things go. He picked up the sketch of the sniper's face Creed had made adjustments to after the sketch artist had finished.
How are you involved? Don't make me come after you, Ava.
Anya took a cab back toward the old city, but got out a few blocks from the Hotel Blanco. The streets were alive with tourists, and she wasn't in the mood to return to her room. At the aroma of spiced, savory meat and the sweetness of plantains, Anya's mouth watered. Music lured her through an inconspicuous black door and into the Gato Negro's cool darkness. The flamenco melody was threaded with the Romani gypsy's heartache and hardships, as palpable now as when the music first emerged. Anya found a table at the back of the curved room, in close confines with the other patrons nursing their drinks. The molded plaster walls were made to look like they were carved from stone. Alone beneath a single spotlight on the dark, narrow stage, the dancer began slowly marking the compás with her footsteps. She stretched up an arm, twisting her wrist in a graceful, compelling movement which demanded that everyone watch. By now, this dancer was quite familiar to Anya. Funny how Ava's expression possessed even more murderous intent now, while dancing, than it had when she'd battled it out with Anya in the alleyway. Fiercely intent in her movements, Ava Vital pushed out anger through her precise steps, weaving raw emotion into the fast rhythm of the dance. Anya almost wished that she herself had some Spanish heritage, because the mood and energy proved darkly alluring. Under cover of everyone's rapt attention on the dancer's performance, Anya walked to the back of the club and noted the hallway at the end of the bar where the performers came and left the stage. Checking that no one was watching her, Anya slipped past the bartender. The hallway was dark, lit by lamps that glowed above doorways curtained with strands of hanging red beads. Anya was grabbed from behind by the ponytail, her head jerked back sharply.
What the hell are you doing here, señorita?
A blade touched the side of Anya's ribcage, and she followed the woman's directions down the dark hallway. She was led past a dressing room no larger than a closet and through a dented metal door. The dancer shoved Anya out into a dark alley and against the brick wall. Spinning around, Anya put her hands on her hips. The woman's knife wavered before her, but the distance Anya had just gained would allow her time to dodge.
Happy to see you again too, Ava.
Why are you following me?
Can't a girl watch a show?
Not you, not he.
I didn't see my name posted on the door with a big red X through it.
Ava menacingly spun the dagger in her fingers with a consummate dexterity born of long practice.
Impressive.
But Anya bet the woman would gape if she pulled her battle sword out of midair.
We need to talk, without giving each other bruises. Is that possible?
How do I know you're not working for the police?
You don't, but I'm not. I've developed a distinct dislike for the police since I've come to Cadiz. I need answers about Diego Montero, Ava.
How do you know my name?
The internet is a marvelous place. There's no picture of you on the club's site, just that interesting tattoo of yours.
The woman crossed her arms over her chest, dagger tip tapping at her chin as she considered Anya's suggestion.
Diego was a friend of mine.
And now he's dead.
I did not do that.
I didn't say that you did. He was involved in something way over his head. Please, I just need a few minutes of your time to ask some questions. You can keep the knife pointed at me if it makes you feel better.
You're either stupid or telling the truth. There's a tapas bar down the street. You're buying.
Anya followed Ava, dressed in full flamenco regalia, down the alley. Where the woman kept her dagger hidden was beyond Anya. While the look really worked for Ava, it didn't intimidate Anya in the least. They took a table inside a restaurant lit by green lights and decorated with kitschy palm trees.
Who are you? Why should I trust you?
I'm Anya Creed. I'm an archaeologist, and I was working on a dig in Puerto Real before coming into Cadiz to spend a few days at the city museum inspecting some Egyptian-found coins.
You mentioned Diego?
I was the one who found him dead in his hotel room.
You were there? How did you find him? Did he invite you in?
No. I happened to have rented the adjacent room and saw his door open and, well...
And how did you learn he was connected to me? Is that why you chased me last night?
I chased you last night because you took a shot at the matador. I had no idea that you had ties to Diego until I later found the website for the Gato Negro. Interesting how that works, isn't it?
I just want to know why you've been following me.
I know Diego played guitar at the Gato Negro, and assume you danced for him.
I did, as did the other dancers in the club. Diego had excellent compass. He keeps the rhythm, kept the rhythm. But once in a while, he tended to get carried away with flourishes. It distracted from my dancing, you know?
I can imagine. The guitarist isn't the soloist, the dancer is.
Exactly.
But were you too close, away from the club? Look, I don't mean to pry into your personal life, but you present an interesting twist to this case.
The case? You said you weren't with the police. I knew you were lying to me.
I'm not with the police. Just let me explain. I'm an archaeologist, and I sometimes host a TV show. So I travel a lot. And on occasion, I join digs, as I did in Jerez. I'm not trying to solve Diego's murder, or even see that the sniper who shot at the Matador is arrested. Not at the moment, anyway. I'm involved because an artifact that I'd just unearthed the day before showed up in Diego's room. Stolen. More than half the artifacts you see in museums are obtained illegally.
I don't go to museums.
Yeah, well, besides being concerned about the looted dig site, Diego's death was senseless. I also care about justice for him.
The Cadiz police can take care of that.
I spoke to the dig supervisor this morning, and there's been another death.
Probably not related.
What makes you say that? What do you know, Ava?
Diego got involved with the wrong people, but they are not directly related to your dig.
How can you know that? You must have been close to Diego to know what he was involved in during off-club hours.
We worked together, shared a beer once in a while, but that was it. Though I suspect he had a crush on me. He had that puppy dog look that always made me uncomfortable.
Who was he involved with? Was he picking up side jobs? Perhaps delivering artifacts to buyers? There was something missing from his hotel room. An artifact, I suspect.
I don't know names or anything like that.
What can you tell me?
All I know is Diego was trying to make extra money. Guitarists don't make a lot, and he didn't work every night at the club. My guess is he got involved with a shady group. He never mentioned anything about it to me, but that's what I pieced together from what you've told me.
Did he mention where he was going that night? Or who he intended to meet?
Like I said, I wasn't as close to him as he would have liked me to be. He spent most of his time with me, moon-eyed. Didn't give me a lot of personal details of his life. If what he did was illegal, do you think he would tell me? No.
So what makes you so sure it's not related to the murder at the dig I mentioned?
I don't. You make me nervous. I don't like you, Cabra Loca.
I'm having trouble finding your appealing qualities, too. Especially since you've got a blade tucked at your back.
A blade I know how to handle.
I'm sure you do. Are you a dancer first or a sniper? I suspect the police are covering up for something. Someone. Probably the killer.
Now you're catching on. And now you understand why I won't be giving anyone information. Not even a curious archaeologist with bad fashion sense. Just leave me alone, and I'll leave you alone. Diego's killer will pay.
You say that like you know who the killer is.
I do.
Then you know who stole the artifact.
No, I only know what I feel in my heart. And my heart tells me Diego got in the path of one very bad man.
You took a shot at Manuel Bravo. You think he killed Diego? That would imply you believe he stole the missing artifact. Did Diego tell you it was Manuel he was going to meet? Ava, if you have information, I need it. The police need it. How does a torero get involved in the theft of artifacts?
I don't know what you're talking about.
And how much is it worth to you, a seemingly innocent flamenco dancer, to take another man's life in revenge for one seemingly innocent guitar player? You say you didn't have a relationship? I'm having trouble believing you, given the vengeful emotions you have against the Matador.
You don't know anything.
I found Diego dead on the bed, but the artifact he had with him was still in the room.
What was it?
A bronze statue of what may be a Baal god?
I don't understand what the hell you just said.
A small bronze bull. That statue wasn't stolen, but there was a wooden crate in Diego's room as well, and that was empty. I don't believe the statue had been transported in that. You're sure you have no idea what else he'd been carrying? It could be a means to pin the murder on the Matador.
Stay out of it, or you're going to get hurt.
We can get more accomplished if we work together.
I don't think so. We are not together. I work alone.
As a sniper? You've been trained, and your fighting skills are expert. Who are you?
Who are you?
Anya Creed. You want to start over? You are Ava Vital. Dancer, sniper, professional assassin?
Hey, you!
The dancer dragged Anya away from the table and slammed her against the brick wall. She turned up a roundhouse and plowed her heel into Anya's gut. They were only noticed by a couple of men sitting three tables away at the back of the restaurant, neither of whom moved to stop the scuffle. Anya wasn't yet willing to throw a punch and attract more attention.
You've had martial arts training. Or is the roundhouse kick a standard flamenco move?
I've always been a dancer. I was born with the rhythm in my blood. The desire to kick ass came later.
Ava slammed her palm to Anya's shoulder, pinning her to the wall. Anya relaxed, reluctant to cause a scene.
I served in the Special Forces a few years, but I found spying more interesting. I was given more training, but too quickly the entire training program was disbanded. I was left unemployed.
Ava released Anya and shifted her hips to a more powerful stance, hands fisted at her sides.
So you're using your skills to commit murder?
Did you enjoy the bullfight?
It was a new experience for me.
Did you approve
of the spectacle? Somewhat.
Americans.
Spaniards.
Ha!
I need your help. I want to find out what was worth killing Diego for. What was in that crate? And who stabbed him in the back to get it?
Ava studied her, working out the pros and cons of revealing all that she knew. For someone who had publicly attempted to murder a man, it was a wise deliberation. By rights, Anya should make a citizen's arrest and haul her into the police station. But she wasn't too sure whether Cesar Soto would arrest Ava or instead slap the handcuffs on Anya. After all, he'd had her escorted from the city and thought she'd be in London right now.
Have you considered the method of killing yet?
What do you know of it?
It was on the local radio. I'm wagering Diego's death is similar to another stabbing here in the city not a month ago. Guy was found on the beach, bleeding out. But by the time they got him to the hospital, he was dead. The stab wound was made from above the head.
That information couldn't have been relayed on the radio.
Rumors have circulated. If you're a performer in the old city, you hear things. Do you want me to tell you about it, or are you going to continue to question my sources?
Go ahead.
The blade was delivered over the head, into the spine, at an angle. A method of placing the blade that is very familiar to some in the city. You understand?
Anya pondered that, trying to figure how or why the murderer would stab in such an awkward manner. To go in over the head, he would have had to approach the man from the front, to allow him to see what was coming, instead of knifing him in the back from behind. It was a bold move, much like... When it came to her, Anya met Ava's eyes, and the woman nodded in acknowledgement.
The estocada? But is that possible with a human? To sever the aorta from such an angle? The anatomies of a bull and a human are completely different.
Does it matter? Now do you question that it was El Bravo who killed Diego?
Of course I do. I have no proof he was in the Hotel Blanco that night. There are any number of matadors in the city. And just because a move associated with the torero was used doesn't mean the murderer actually was one. Who told you this?
Not important. Think about it. You look like a smart woman. You'll put the pieces together.
The dancer, who would be an assassin, strode out, grace evident in the swing of her shoulders and the sturdy placement of her steps. A few admirers followed her exit, including Anya. Ava believed the bullfighter had killed Diego.
What motive could he have?
The walls of El Bravo's villa had been lined with artifacts depicting bulls. He'd said they were gifts.
But wouldn't a man interested in bull paraphernalia have taken the ball statue from Diego's room? And why is Ava so determined to take revenge against him?
Ava said that she and Diego had no relationship outside of the club. That hardly formed the basis for wanting to avenge Diego's death. On the other hand, Anya should never judge what pushed a person to murder. She needed to get back to the hotel and check online. By now, someone may have recognized the photos she uploaded and posted a response. Back in her hotel room, Anya accessed her online post. There was an entire page of replies to her uploaded pictures, and she scanned through them. Most replies suspected it was an effigy of Baal, but had no proof and hadn't seen the exact object before. One suggested it was a party favor for one of Hugh Hefner's blowouts and thought she should try to crack it open to see if a room key fell out. Not everyone posting on the thread was helpful or apparently sober. One reply stood out, addressed from Rockford LaPlante. She'd heard that name before. Some kind of Indiana Jones type who lived off the land and refused to take money for adventures or movie deals.
Must have a trust fund.
How else to support a habit of world travel and dangerous adventure? She read his email.
Miss Creed, it is a pleasure to communicate with you after hearing so much about your adventures. And yes, I admit, I follow your television show whenever I'm near electricity, which isn't often. The pictures you've posted may seem to represent just another bronze statue, but I am especially excited to see an actual photograph of it. So much so, I'd rather not discuss details online. Could you please give me a ring? I'm traveling toward Puka Puka and will be in and out of cell phone reception, so do try to make contact today if possible.
The email had been sent 6 hours earlier. He listed a phone number, which she promptly entered into her cell phone and pushed call.
Miss Creed, wish you would call sooner. Entering a dead zone.
Thank you for giving me your number. You know about the bronze bull statue I posted online?
Yeah. Won't believe what's hidden inside, or so I believe.
Inside the statue? Our connection is awful, Mr. LaPlante. Maybe I should call you back later?
No. Off-grid for a month. Take this down. Louis XIII, Austrian princess, dowry.
Anya started making notes.
Got it. Anything else?
Hidden treasure. Ruby.
The line went dead. And that was all she would get from Rockford LaPlante. Puka Puka, a coral atoll in the Pacific Ocean's Cook Islands, barely more than 3 kilometers in area, was extremely remote. Anya wasn't surprised at the lack of cell phone reception.
Have fun in Puka Puka. Wish I was there. Louis XIII. And his Austrian princess?
Anya thought over what she knew about the French king who had ruled when Versailles was the de facto capital of France. Princess Anne of Austria was the daughter of Philip III of Spain. At the time, Cardinal Richelieu wielded more power than the king, and musketeers went on daring escapades for the queen.
A hidden treasure inside the bull? But what is Ubi? Ubi, Ubi. Ruby? Of course. There's a ruby inside the statue?
This case suddenly got very interesting. Anya had to look up Louis XIII and Anne of Austria. Somehow, the bull statue was related to those two. That LaPlante had said princess instead of queen indicated they were not yet married. She pulled up another web page. Anya sat upright on the bed. The patio door slammed open. Suddenly, two hands clutched her neck, painfully squeezing her carotid artery. The attacker knew what he was doing. He didn't need to apply too much pressure for more than 5 or 6 seconds before she would pass out. Anya swung her backpack up and managed to clock the attacker in the side of the head. It was enough of a surprise to loosen his grip. With an elbow to his ribs, she gained her freedom. Anya lunged forward to land her palms on the end of the bed and pushed back forcefully. She spun around with a roundhouse that connected with his jaw. He wobbled. Anya's attacker shook his head, grinned, and pulled out a pair of wooden nunchucks. The tiny, olive-skinned man performed a flashy figure eight with the weapon. He backed her toward the bed. She sprung onto it, causing the laptop to slide off and land on the floor. No time to lament the possible damage as Anya lured him around the side of the bed. She jumped off the opposite side. Anya called the leather-hilted sword to her grip. Narrowly dodging a strike, Anya swung around, cutting the air and cropping the hair of her attacker's stick-straight buzz cut even shorter. The attacker ducked and swung out the nunchucks, sweeping low so Anya had to leap back onto the bed to avoid taking them to the side of her knee. He came up holding both sticks in one hand and blocked Anya's sword.
Who sent you? Why are you here?
Her next swing caught him on the shoulder, slicing cleanly through his loose-fitting leather jacket and spattering blood across the pale bedspread. The man swung and hit the back of Anya's thigh with the hard wood as she jumped to the floor.
Get out of Cadiz.
Says who?
She swung up the sword, not under his throat, but instead pressing the tip into the gaping slice in his shoulder.
Tell me who sent you.
The man rammed his shoulder against the blade. It was such an incredible move, Anya dropped her guard. In that second, the nunchuck swung around and hit her in the back of the head. She wobbled, but maintained consciousness. Sweeping the blade blindly, Anya managed to block another oncoming blow. And another. Anya managed an undercut to the man's ribcage. This time, he gripped the wound and stumbled toward the open patio door. Anya's attacker ran out. He vaulted over the balcony. She raced to the wrought iron balcony and saw that he'd landed on the back of a trailer stacked with cardboard cartons of melons. Rolling off onto the street in a clutter of broken cantaloupe, he took off running, leaving a trail of blood-spattered melons in his wake.
Time to find a new hotel.
And some aspirin. Ouch.
Swinging out her sword arm, she dismissed the blade back into the otherwear and went to gather up her things. Anya slid into a patio chair at the cafe across the street from the Hotel Argantonio, which wasn't far from the museum and the Plaza de Mina. She intended to check in at the hotel, but first wanted to gather her wits about her. Besides, she was hungry after the tussle at the Hotel Blanco. She'd moved up in her choice of hotels, which she hoped would deflect further in-room fights with unknown hitmen. Powering up the laptop, which sported a new dent on the corner among its many other dents, she decided to cybersurf before she completely forgot what Ava Vital had told her earlier. Anya looked up the bullfight, in particular, the final act. The faena was a series of passes made before the bull to square it up in preparation for the kill. To make the kill, the matador thrust the estoque between the bull's shoulder blades, which penetrated the aorta, or heart. The torero must charge head-on toward the bull and allow the closest possible connection to the horns. It was the moment when many matadors were gored. A quick, clean death was preferred, and the crowd would let the matador know with boos or seat cushions tossed into the ring if he hadn't placed the sword well. The bedspread had barely been wrinkled in Diego's hotel room. Someone not experienced with placing the blade might have struggled with his victim. A professional, however, would have worked quickly and cleanly. Anya paused to let the idea of an actual matador killing Diego sink in. Such a man, who would kill for an artifact, would likely already have many artifacts of immense value in his home. Had it been a business exchange gone bad? Why would the matador kill the delivery person and then not take both artifacts?
He'd only wanted what was in the wooden crate.
Anya pressed a palm to the back of her head. She felt the tender bruise which had started to swell. Anya was lucky she hadn't gotten a cracked skull out of the deal. Her thoughts went immediately to the votive crowns in Manuel Bravo's sanctuary. They were the right size to fit the crate, which would make Ava Vital's assumption correct. But that still didn't explain why the dancer had it in for El Bravo.
Or how a bull statue possibly containing a valuable treasure is related to any of this.
Anya switched her search to the 17th century.
Louis XIII and Anne of Austria were both 14 when they were married. Ugh, tough luck, kids. I can't imagine representing a nation so young, and then to be forced to the conjugal bed? Ugh.
Anne's father, Philip III of Spain, sent along a dowry of jewels and a wardrobe worth 500,000 crowns. Anya poked around for more information on the dowry, perhaps a list of its contents, but she found nothing online. Anne of Austria had traveled in a caravan from Spain to Versailles, where her future husband met her. The dowry was maybe carried by the retinue, or perhaps it was sent by an armed guard preceding or following that first ostentatious meeting. She clicked over to a Rumors of History site, and after sorting through the bibliography of 17th century articles, was thrilled to find a scanned sketch very similar to the bronze bull. The article's author was Rockford LaPlante himself, and stated that the bull was merely a delightful ruse which hid an even greater treasure. Anne's father, Philip, had enjoyed puzzles and secrets, and often had valuable objects made that hid inner workings or treasures. The piece could well have been intended as a gift to King Louis XIII. The scan was of an old document, so it didn't look like something LaPlante could have drawn in contemporary times, and it was intricate, even though the actual statue was rather plain. It indicated an open belly in the bull, which hid something inside. The scan was blurred there, and Anya bit her lip because she couldn't make out exactly what was inside.
A ruby?
Anya, why are you still here?
I'm just trying to help, but it's hard to do that when strange men wielding nunchucks jump me in my hotel room.
Are you all right, Anya? Did you call the police? Where are you now?
I'm fine, though the back of my head hurts like a mother. I suspect the police wouldn't be too pleased to hear from me again.
Any idea who sent the guy? Did he say?
No. Between dodging his weapon and watching him leap over my balcony to make his escape, he didn't take the time to mention who was behind his visit. I tell you, people have lost all etiquette nowadays.
At least you're not hurt seriously. You aren't, are you?
Eh, I'll survive.
Did you go to the emergency room?
I'll be fine.
All right. Where are you staying?
I'm looking for a new hotel at the moment.
So, no luck on your search?
Well, a bit of serendipity. I spoke to the woman who tried to kill El Bravo.
Good heavens. How did you manage that meeting?
Oh, I have my ways. She's led me to believe Diego Montero's killer may have been a matador or a man with the skills of a matador. And there's a certain local matador who has an amazing collection of artifacts displayed in his home.
Manuel Bravo. I've been to his place.
I wasn't aware you two were friends.
Acquaintances. A few years ago, I was invited to a party and only spoke to him briefly. Did you see the Scythian ball god he's got in the main room? You can't lay your hands on those anymore.
You don't seem too upset the man has a collection of illegal artifacts.
Well, that's only an assumption, though it's probably true. But what can I do about it? To speak against a local hero would be insanity. Watch yourself, Anya. El Bravo is loved by everyone. Don't throw stones unless and until you've got facts. Do you?
No. And don't worry, I've no intention of accusing the man of anything. Have you had any luck locating possible warehouses where the bronze statue may have passed through?
I apologize, but I've been busy with work.
Of course. Does the name Rockford LaPlante mean anything to you?
No. Why do you ask?
It came up while I was doing some research on the statue online.
Wait a minute. Is he some kind of adventurer? A crazy, live-off-the-fat-of-the-land archaeologist who would rather dance with pygmies than hold a civil conversation?
Sounds right. I didn't net any information, but I thought his background was fascinating.
Indeed. Now, I can tell you more about Jonathan Crockett.
Go ahead.
I did a deeper search on the internet. The most recent scholarly article he published was in 2002. It's as if he fell off the earth after that. He left the University of London to go on sabbatical. He's been working on small digs around the Cadiz area for at least 2 years. A few digs were financed by the University of Madrid, which I verified with Roberto Rodriguez in acquisitions. Or rather, his assistant, since Rodriguez never takes my calls.
Okay, thanks. One more question. Have you ever had the opportunity to see any Visigothic votive crowns pass through the museum?
Only when I was working at the Madrid Museum. Gorgeous things. Why do you ask?
I saw a couple in Manuel Bravo's home.
They can't possibly be authentic. Acquiring even one of those would be quite a feat.
Yes, and perhaps worth murder.
Anya, do take my warning about pointing the finger at a local hero seriously.
I do. And you're probably right. They couldn't possibly be authentic. Thanks again for the invitation to view the coins, James. We'll talk soon.
So, she'd missed a key possibility regarding the dig. Someone was funding Professor Crockett's efforts near the city to keep him close by. Because it didn't matter if he found nothing on his digs, he was perhaps a front for bigger and better things, like whatever had been in the wooden crate in Diego's hotel room. A round object, a little smaller in circumference than a basketball.
Like a votive crown.
Anya typed in Visigothic votive crown. Google Images brought up pictures of the gold votive crown displayed in the Madrid Museum. It had been designed by the Visigoth king Recaswinth in the 7th century and donated to the Roman Catholic Church. The crown had a circumference that could very well be similar to a basketball. Anya sat back, crossing her arms. Fitting the crown into the wooden crate worked like a how-to-smuggle-artifacts tutorial video in her mind. She replayed it over a few times, and it continued to fit snugly into the brown packing paper shreds. Anya brought up all the information she could find on the Visigothic votive crowns. There weren't many pieces circulating through the museum system at the moment. The most famous were included in the treasure of Guadassar, dug up close to Toledo, Spain in the mid-19th century. The treasure had been divided over the years, and many pieces had been lost, which Anya interpreted as stolen or sold to private collectors. Of the known pieces in the treasure, the National Archaeological Museum of Spain, in Madrid, listed 6 crowns in their possession, and the Musée de Cluny in Paris featured 2, one of which had been bejeweled with pearls. She found a gorgeous picture of a gold crown decorated with sapphires and precious stones that once belonged to King Recaswinth in the second half of the 7th century. The elaborate filigree design featured a dazzling Byzantine pendant cross, along with a Latin inscription meaning, "King Recaswinth offered this." A truly remarkable piece. Anya tilted a look at the crown. It seemed more elaborate than those in Bravo's home, but his had been decorated with sapphires, and one of them read, "Given by Alaric." She transferred a JPEG to her cell phone, then looked up King Alaric. Much earlier than Recuswinth, Alaric was 4th century and had been the first Germanic leader to take the city of Rome. There were no references to a votive crown in his biography, but that didn't rule out the possibility that Alaric had one fashioned. His apparent lust for requesting outrageous ransoms led her to believe he would have surrounded himself with fine things, including a gold crown or two.
I wonder if one or two crowns have been reported stolen within the past few years.
After another 15 minutes spent searching, she stumbled on a brief article listing the Cluny Museum as having reported a crown missing 6 months earlier, while in transport to the University of London. Police had investigated and had quickly traced the diverted shipment to a British man who had been found dead in a warehouse of stolen artifacts. A local man, he was named as a police informant and had committed a laundry list of minor criminal activity. No name was mentioned, and the article stopped there. The case had just stopped.
Weird. And yet...
Anya had a hunch. A local London man who informed about stolen artifacts? She knew a guy like that. Russell Jones was 60 going on 20 and had never met a stolen chunk of pottery he didn't like and couldn't sell. He was also keen on tracking the non-existent paper trail of artifacts and knew everyone who had ever touched looted goods from decades of looting all over the world. He was the last of the wild and crazy pot hunters. Picking up the cell phone, she scanned through her contacts, pleased to find she still had Russell's number. He changed it often, so she didn't expect it to go through, but when a female answered, she asked after Russell, using the code name he expected.
Is he all right? He's a friend. I haven't spoken to him in years, though, and had a question about a Visigothic crown.
That damned crown!
Can I speak to him about it?
He's not here!
Can I leave you my number so he can return my call? It's important. I'm trying to track the origins of a specific votive crown and determine the current buyer.
He's dead! Because of that stupid crown! So you won't get any answers, and I don't know who you are!
I'm so sorry. Do you happen to know where he sold the crown, or even where it was shipped?
Are you going to find the guy who shot him in the back of the head?
Did you report it to the authorities?
They were the ones who found him dead when they were investigating the crown. He was going to marry me, you know?
Oh, again, I'm sorry, but...
I think it was Spain. I'm sure of it because I like the curly stuff they have on their interior design. Russell called it Moorish or something like that. I want to visit, but he said we'd have to wait for the honeymoon.
Spain, thank you. That helps me a lot. If you've got records...
If you're a friend of Russell's, you should know better.
Sure. Thanks again. Goodbye.
Anya hung up. The setting sun flashed across the hotel's glass-topped tables. Two men who handled the votive crown were now dead. No, make that three, if indeed the crown had been inside the crate in Diego's hotel room. Everyone thought to have touched the crown was dead or missing. So whoever held it now was either next on that list or the one responsible. What's more, Ava had mentioned a man found dead on the beach with a stab wound in his back. Might that man have been a liaison to deliver a valuable gold crown?
I wonder if a certain person gets so upset when people touch his stuff that he's provoked to murder.
Manuel waited patiently as Cristo unwrapped the bolero jacket from the crisp tissue paper that kept it pristine while traveling from stadium to stadium. The jacket was stiff and retained its shape even when off his body, due to the starch and elaborate beadwork. After each fight, Cristo brushed it clean if there was no blood on it, and repacked it in tissue before hanging it in a special traveling wardrobe case. It had to be soaked in cold water overnight if it had taken on blood. Manuel preferred the light blue traje de luces because it had brought him luck over the years. Much better than the purple suit he'd been offered by a wily tailor last year. The fabric had been the color of a coffin lining. Very bad luck should he wear that. Luck had not brought Anya Creed into his life. There was something about her he didn't like. She was beautiful and smart and curious. That was it. Her curiosity offended him. She had no right to enter his sanctuary without permission.
Arms?
Manuel stretched back his arms and received the bolero jacket. The entire costume weighed about 13 pounds, a weight he had borne through the years to entertain the masses at the risk of his life. Not an easy thing to wear in the hot Spanish sun, but he'd grown up wearing a smaller suit designed by his mother. He was more comfortable in the suit of lights than in the casual clothing he wore outside of the ring. Cristo adjusted the narrow black tie at the front of Manuel's neck and then left, knowing Manuel's routine required half an hour to himself before loading the capes and the swords in the van and leaving for the corrida, to another dance with death. Striding out from the bedroom with his flat black leather shoes, Manuel entered the sanctuary's plaster walls. He bowed before the altar and crossed himself, kissed his curled knuckles, and offered blessings to the Virgin Mother. Kneeling on the prie-dieu, he silently recited the Lord's Prayer in his head, and then gave thanks for all the blessings he had received and was yet to receive. He didn't think to bless his brother, Reynaldo. Rather, he did consider it, then decided he would not. Manuel tilted a look up at the votive crowns, gleaming in the circle of candlelight. The rubies set into the pounded gold on the first crown winked, as if the very eye of God approved the task before him. Another piece of his soul ransomed for the cheers and adulation. Standing, he ran his fingertips lightly around the base of the largest gold crown. Closing his eyes, he thought to feel the energy vibrating from kings centuries past. Without their strength, he could find none for himself. And yet, he didn't feel the positive energy so strongly tonight as he had on previous days. Anya Creed had touched the crown. He knew it. She'd lied about touching it to cover her crime. She had stolen the energy for herself. Over the years, women, more often than not, had proven his bane. He couldn't allow Creed to keep his power. He blew out the candle. Manuel enjoyed the strong rosemary scent of the candle's smoke. It cleared his head and narrowed his focus. Now he would get in the van and ride to the stadium, but he must remain in his body, unaffected by the cheers and jeers from the crowd, the protesters, the hangers-on who wanted to touch him. He would maintain this peace until he entered the ring, a peace made fragile by the reduced energy of the votive crowns. The private rooms assigned to the matadors were behind the bull stable. Manuel liked when he heard nothing on the other side of the wall. To hear snorting and the clacking of horns meant the bulls were edgy and fearful. No torero preferred a cowardly opponent. Manuel paced the short stretch of the narrow room, avoiding the complimentary bottled water set out. He didn't want to risk voiding his bladder should he be grazed by a horn or, worse, gored. He wouldn't be gored. He was too quick, too agile. El Bravo was invincible. He was first to fight this afternoon, and last. He liked those positions. Fresh out in the ring, he was the first to capture the audience's admiration, and in the last position, he could win them completely after watching the other toreros' performances and learning from and avoiding their mistakes. The door opened, and as Manuel turned to demand solitude of the intruder, he saw Cesar Soto with his hands shoved in his front pockets. The man had an air of the laid-back cowboy seen in American westerns. Manuel didn't like the cocky attitude, though some might claim the toreros walked the same arrogant walk. It wasn't cockiness, but confidence.
You know, I don't see visitors before the fight.
I came to wish you luck.
And so you have.
You have no right to be quick with me, boy.
What you want? The money's gone. I work my body weary each season to meet the blood price my father has been paying for far too long.
I've never expected anything from you, yet we remain tied by bonds that sicken me.
No one asked you to become my keeper.
Is that so? Then I should stop covering your tracks. just let the detritus fall where it may.
Cesar grabbed Manuel by the wrist, but the torero wrenched away from the presumptuous intimacy.
Don't touch me.
Right. Don't touch your things. Don't touch you. You're a freak, Bravo.
Clenching a fist, Manuel ran it along the gold beading at the lower edge of his jacket to distract him from his anger.
Have you spoken to the archaeologist?
The gorgeous, green-eyed one. Of course.
Right. There's not an attractive woman in the country that hasn't lain beneath the great El Bravo's horns. Did you screw her?
Why is that your concern?
Because she's been looking into things, asking questions. She's trouble. Avoid her, Bravo, if you know what's good for you.
You have no idea what is good for me, Soto.
Is that so? Well, it's not that woman. You have another fight in a few days?
I shall kill all 6 bulls. It's the grand exhibition in my honor.
Right. Your 100th corrida. How could I let that one slip from memory?
Cesar stroked a hand along his holstered gun, then opened the door. Outside, Manuel's team waited in full regalia with capes and hats, lined along the hallway, quiet yet anxious.
The archaeologist is getting close to touching things you'd prefer remained untouched.
She's already contaminated something I hold precious.
Well then, you know how to take care of people who touch your things.
Manuel lowered his head, nodding resolutely. He didn't like it when Soto presumed things about him.
To the bulls.
Soto left. Manuel punched the wall.
You'll see what I do with the bulls, you bastard.
Garin's call came as a surprise. Anya was walking along the shore, checking out a row of warehouses edging the south side of the city. Could one of them be hiding illicit antiquities? Anya had her eye out for armed guards after sighting one at the corner rooftop of a brick building half a block from the nearest dock.
Manuel mentioned your interest in some crowns he has hanging in his sanctuary.
If you can call spotting stolen goods an interest, then yes. Is he angry about that? I don't think he believed me when I told him I hadn't touched them.
On the contrary, he said if you liked them so much, you should get one for yourself. He got the replicas in a little shop in Cadiz off San Pedro.
That's not far from the hotel where I'm staying. But a replica? Hard to believe El Bravo would place a cheap trinket in a room he calls his sanctuary.
You didn't go in the sanctuary, did you, Anya?
I was lost, looking for the bathroom.
Anya, don't do this. Not everything that looks like an artifact is valuable. You of all people should know that. Some items simply hold personal value.
And some friendships blind people to the truth.
I'm passing along the message. Bravo thought you might be interested in owning one for yourself.
So what are you up to this fine sunny day?
I'm getting ready to watch the fight.
I'm not invited to join you.
Not this afternoon. I've got another friend on my arm.
Huh.
Good luck with your antique shopping, Anya.
Thanks. I think I will check out the shop Manuel suggested.
So Manuel claimed the votive crowns were cheap knockoffs? The 2 crowns in his sanctuary had been the real thing. She felt it. Anya had handled too many genuine artifacts over the years to guess this one wrong.